The Frenchman did not reply, but after a moment he crushed the end of his cigarette on the doorframe, dropped it, stepped to the side, and gestured with exaggerated courtesy for Mannering to enter. Mannering glanced to the corners of the room, letting his gaze linger pointedly on Gascoigne's bed. Once Gascoigne had closed the door behind him, he rounded on his host and said,
"Who has your loyalty?"
"I am not sure I understand the question," Gascoigne said. "You wish me to make a list of my friends?"
Mannering glared at him.
"Here's my question," he said. "Does Anna have your loyalty?"
"Yes," Gascoigne said. "Up to a point, of course."
He sat down in his striped wing-back armchair, but made no gesture to offer his guest a seat. Mannering locked his hands behind his back.
"So, if you knew that she was mixed up in something, you wouldn't tell me?"
"Well, it would depend on the situation, of course," Gascoigne said.
"What kind of something are you talking about?"
"Are you lying on her behalf?"
"I agreed to conceal a pile of money on her behalf," Gascoigne said. "I hid it underneath my bed. But you already know all about that. So I suppose the answer is no."
"Why does she have your loyalty? Up to a point?"
Gascoigne's wrists were limp upon the armrests. He had arranged himself casually, like a king in a throne. He explained that he had cared for Anna when she was released from jail 2 weeks prior, and had thereafter courted her friendship. He pitied her, for he believed that someone was using her for ill, but he could not say that he enjoyed any special intimacy with her, and had never paid to enjoy her company. The black dress, he added, had belonged to his late wife. He had given it to the whore as a gesture of charity, for her whoring gown had been ruined during her sojourn in jail. He had not expected that she would enter a period of mourning upon acquiring the dress, and in truth had been rather disappointed by this eventuation, for he thought her a very fine specimen of her sex, and would have very much liked to have taken his pleasure in the conventional way.
"Your story doesn't account for that gold underneath your bed," Mannering said.
Gascoigne shrugged. He felt too tired and too angry to lie.
"The morning after Crosby Wells died," he said, "Anna woke up in jail with a great quantity of gold stashed about her person. The metal had been sewn around her corset. She had no idea how she had come to be in possession of such a sum, and was naturally quite frightened. She requested my help. I thought it best to hide it, for we did not know who had hidden the gold on her body or for what purpose. We have not yet had it valued, but I would hazard its total worth at well over £100, and in all likelihood a great deal more. That, Mr. Mannering, is the whole truth, at least as far as I am concerned."
Mannering was quiet. This explanation did not make any sense to him at all.
"I must say," Gascoigne added, "you do me a great disservice by assuming my guilt before you have queried me on the subject of my innocence. I resent very much that you have trespassed upon my time and my privacy in such a belligerent way."
"You can leave off with that kind of talk," Mannering said.
"Belligerent? Have I pointed a firearm in your face? Have I threatened you with violence?"
"You have not. And yet I would be happier if you were to take off your belt."
"Take it off?"
Mannering looked contemptuous.
"And lay it down in the middle of the table, I suppose, with each of us an equal distance away, until you make a move for it and I'm too slow. I won't fall for it. I've seen that trick before."
"Then I will make another request," Gascoigne said. "I request that your presence in my house is of as short a duration as possible. If you have further questions, you ought to make them now. But I have told you everything I know about that gold."
"Listen,"
Mannering said firmly. He was rather bewildered that he had so swiftly lost the upper hand.
"I didn't mean for us to start off on the wrong foot."
"Certainly you meant it," said Gascoigne. "Perhaps now you regret it, but you meant it."
Mannering swore.
"I don't regret anything," he cried. "I don't regret anything at all."
"That accounts for your serenity."
"Let me tell you something,"
Mannering said, but he was prevented from saying anything further. Just at that moment came a smart rap upon the door. Gascoigne stood immediately. Mannering, who looked suddenly alarmed, stepped back several paces and withdrew one of his pistols from its holster. He held it against his thigh to conceal it from view, and nodded for Gascoigne to lift the latch. On the threshold, standing with his stick set at a rather rakish angle from his body, and his hat tipped back from his brow, was Harold Nielsen. He bowed, and was just about to make his introduction to Gascoigne, when he perceived over the latter's shoulder Dick Mannering standing awkwardly with one arm held stiff at his side. Nielsen burst out laughing.
"Well," he said, "seems I'm two steps behind you, Dick. Everywhere I go today, there you are, and you got there first. Hello, Mr. Gascoigne. My name's Harold Nielsen. I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. I do hope I'm not interrupting anything."
Gascoigne bowed courteously, though his expression remained cold.
"Not at all," he said. "Do come in."
"I had come to talk with you about Anna Wetherill," Nielsen said cheerfully, wiping his boots, "but I see I've been pipped at the post."
Gascoigne closed the door and said, "What about Anna?" At the same time, Mannering said,
"Steady up, Mr. Nielsen."
Nielsen answered Gascoigne,
"Well, it concerns something rather peculiar," he said, "so perhaps it's not for all ears. But listen, I don't want to interrupt you. I can easily come back when you're not otherwise engaged."
"No, please," Gascoigne said. "Mr. Mannering was just leaving. He just told me so himself."
It vexed Mannering to be excluded in this way.
"What's it all about?"
he said to Nielsen.
Nielsen made a short bow. "It is a very delicate situation. I do apologize."
"Hang delicate," Mannering said. "You needn't conceal anything from me, for God's sake. We're in this together. Is this about the widow? Or about the gold?"
Nielsen was uncomprehending.
"The Wells fortune?"
He turned to Gascoigne.
"Are you mixed up in that, then?"
Gascoigne was looking very amused all of a sudden.
"It seems I am being interrogated from all quarters at once," he said. "Are you also wearing pistols, Mr. Nielsen? You really ought to confess them if you are."
"I'm not wearing pistols," Nielsen said.
He glanced at Mannering and saw the revolver in his hand.
"What's that for? What are you doing?"
But Mannering did not answer. He was caught, momentarily, between all that he wished to conceal from Nielsen and all that he wished to conceal from Gascoigne.